We kick off the 1 o'clock hour, a little bit of a reset. Mets and Yankees both coming off decisive, decisive victories nonetheless on Wednesday. Yankees, obviously, with the 6 home runs, sweeping away the Washington Nationals. Nolan McLean, obviously, the star of the night. The 8 innings of 4-hit shutout baseball, no walks, the strikeouts. I mean, just the complete complement of pitchers, keeping hitters off balance, a little bit old school, the emphasis when we're looking at, you know, the starting rotation. And you look at this Met team starting to find themselves. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Now, it's got to go out there and continue. They've got 29 games to go, I believe, in this MLB regular season, within 4 games now of the Philadelphia Phillies in the National League East. And you like the fact that Vientos has got a 10-game hitting streak. You like the fact, I mean, you look at the idea of Juan Soto, who we spent, we've spent a lot of time talking about Soto, year number one with the New York Mets. Well, think about this. I mean, since late July, I think July 29th, Juan Soto with the runners in scoring positions hitting 400. I mean, his OPS is north of 1,100. I mean, and he was dreadful before that. It's not been your prototypical Juan Soto season, year number one. I think there comes a lot with signing for $765 million, obviously leaving the Yankees for the Mets. The pressure that comes along with the contract, the expectations that come along with the contract, and there was clearly an adjustment for Juan Soto. But, you know, he's starting to hit to the level that you expect Soto to be, because he is a generational offensive player. Not a true five-tool player, but what he can do up the plate is, and we've seen it, whether it be Washington, San Diego, the Yankees are now here with the New York Mets, we've seen it where he's been able to be that caliber of hitter. But it'd be fascinating when you look at this Met team being as dangerous as they potentially be can be come October. And, you know, maybe the turning point to this season was not just the last 3 nights, because Philadelphia is clearly, when they step into Citi Field, they're seeing ghosts, to steal a line from Sam Darnold in that game against the New England Patriots. But when you look at the statement the Mets made, you can look at the last 3 games, but you could also look at the life that McLean has brought to this Mets starting rotation. Now, it's got to have a trickle-down effect. You're going to need Manaea, Senga, Peterson, obviously. We're going to see Jonah Tong tomorrow night against the Miami Marlins. Looking forward to that after seeing, you know, his strikeout-to-walk ratio in AA, AAA, and his dominant stuff that we've seen down in the minor leagues. And people have compared him to kind of being a modern-day Tim Lincecum with the extension that he has in his delivery. Looking forward to seeing what he can provide, but there's no doubt the brilliance of McLean. I think it's real. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. The confidence he has on the mound, the pitches. You should be excited if you're a New York Met fan, and it has been a long summer. You know, as we wind down summer, you know, we hit the unofficial end to summer, which is Labor Day weekend, and football right around the corner. Big college football weekend upcoming. Ohio State and Texas on Saturday night. It's going to be a fun one with Arch Manning, the starting quarterback for Steve Sarkisian, the Texas Longhorns. But football right around the corner. It has been a long, you know, summer for the Mets and the Yankee fan. It really has been. Some disappointment, not exactly the summer where, you know, they've grabbed the bull by the horns, taken it and run with it. You had to earn it as a fan this summer. And I get it. And listen, that's the long 162 game MLB regular season. And there were times you questioned whether or not this Met team was good enough. We saw the reinforcements by David Stearns at the MLB trade deadline, but we can look at a turning point, maybe being McLean being called up, inserted into the starting rotation. We'll see what Tong is like tomorrow night. But Vientos is a big-time key to lengthen out this lineup. Unquestionably, he is. And so when you see him starting to resemble the hitter that he did a year ago, at this time of the year, late August, soon September, 29 games to go in the regular season, you can think about what kind of impact he can have. As far as the Yankees go, listen, they're playing good baseball. You know, they're beating bad baseball teams outside of, you know, the Nats. They sweep away Washington, you know, lost 3 of 4 against Boston. But it's kind of the same thing we've seen from this team in terms of, you know, when they face teams they should beat, they do it more often than not decisively. You know, and they hit 6 home runs and have games in which they put 11, 12, 13 runs. Well, the concerns you have with the Yankees, even in a wide-open American League, is And the positives are going to be, you know, what you've gotten production-wise, power-wise from guys like Grisham, year number one of Cody Bellinger. It'd be great to see Judge getting back. Giancarlo Stanton, this has been the best version of Stanton we've seen in a Yankee uniform. Positive that Max Fried, his last two starts, has resembled the way the pitcher that he was to begin the season when he was one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. Even a wide-open American League, the concerns you have is when the home runs go away, can the Yankees go out there and generate an offense? How stubborn are they going to be with Volpe at the shortstop position? And can this team go out there and play clean baseball consistently to get back to where they were a year ago, which is the World Series, and back to the Fall Classic, and this time potentially go out there and win it? You know, have I learned anything? Like, did I take anything massively away outside of Stanton? I mean, I mean, Grisham's been a positive, and I don't think anyone expected him to have the kind of power production that he has had this season. Bellinger's been, you know, everything you could want year one as a New York Yankee. Stanton is the guy that I think he's got a lot of grief, has handled it well. He's got a lot of criticism in the city, sometimes rightfully so, sometimes justified, sometimes unjustified. I think what you've seen here from Stanton is the drive to win. And he's been arguably right there as one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter in Major League Baseball since he got off the IL. He's been remarkable. I mean, he's been utterly remarkable. And we know this about Stanton. When you get to October, he's going to hit. So what are you going to take away from the Yankees the next four games against the Chicago White Sox, who are 48-85 on the season? Not all that much. Expect them to win the series and not be all that surprised if they end up winning all four games. 110 on this Thursday afternoon. Mark Melusis with you. 888-808-1019. Have they given out the number for Jonah Tong yet, Puff?
They have. It is official. There is a number that Jonah Tong is wearing.
All right.
Do you want to guess what number it is?
Sure, why not? I like a good guessing game. Are you going to give me a range of numbers, or are you going to just...
1 like through 99.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, just start off with... Go start with the big numbers.
I just, playing off the last segment, I'll go 67.
No, I was hoping you were going there, and no, it's not. How about this? We'll say higher or lower than 50.
All right, higher or lower than 50.
All right, it's lower.
Lower than 50. I'll say 43.
Lower.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the last three Mets to wear this number. How about that?
Okay, let me hear.
Travis Jankowski, Zach Short, Ben Gamel.
I'm not good.
If I give you another one, the next guy after that, I think you're going to figure it out.
All right, well, okay. I don't know. Let's see. 24.
Close. Lower.
Lower. 23.
Close, but lower.
20.
No, oh, well, that's
Alonso's
Alonso.
20. Pete Alonso's 20.
What close, but higher. How about that?
Oh, okay. So it's 21 or 22?
It's 21. It's the former Max
22
Scherzer.
Soto. 22 Soto.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm terrible with numbers. Yeah, there you go. I'm such an idiot.
Number. Pete Alonso's 20, Soto's 22.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. 21. There you go. 21. So he's got 21. That's a good number. Yeah, that's a good number.
You think that number will be retired anytime soon?
Oh, stop. Stop. let's head out to Belmore. It's Bobby. It's the fan. What's going on, Bobby?
All right, before I get to Tong, Moose, Aaron Grant's kind of very arrogant. And for a guy that's got his defense got killed his last two playoff games, and, I understand why he's upset because he doesn't have a quarterback, and, you know, he can't run the ball all game because this is the mid-70s before the Mel Blount rule. So, so I understand why he's upset. But let me get to Tong. When McClain came, it lit a fire under Holmes' ass because he was pitching terrible for like 8 starts. All of a sudden, when McClain came up, he was pitched very well the last couple of starts. And, I don't think it's more than a coincidence that McClain lit a fire because he was going to be next to the bullpen. Now, with Tong, I think, Manea, I call him Manua lately, same thing as saying the way he pitched. But, you know, he did pitch better his last couple of days ago when Tong was going to get called up. And I know he didn't go long, but he did pitch better. And maybe there's a lot of fire under Bolton now. Because if not, one of those two guys is going to the bullpen in long relief for the postseason. If Tong pitches like nearly what McClain has done. And maybe he could light a fire under these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone gets to a level. I don't know if you necessarily need someone to light a fire. I think maybe alleviate some of the pressure. The sorry rotation just was not good enough. It was not sustainable when you looked at the Mets. I've talked about the fact that I thought the Mets lineup was going to define this team this year. You couldn't have the starters barely going five innings and asking that bullpen to continuously take on that kind of work and not get gassed as the season goes along.
What could happen is this. If they're going to a six-man rotation because they have 16 consecutive days. But once they go back to a five-man rotation, if Tong pitches well, the two or three starts that he's going to get, and I am saying continue to fourth. I know they've had injuries, so I'm not counting on them coming back. They're still coming back from injuries. But, you know, for the postseason, if Tong could get into the rotation and you put Holmes back in the bullpen, and then you could put a Manaea against the lefty team like the Dodgers. They play the Dodgers in the first round or the Padres. Then you could put Singer in against the righties, you know, with their right-handed lineup. And as a long hit, and one of those guys is going to make the postseason roster for the first round. But, I mean, if Tong pitches near, I mean, the guy's been dodging. Everyone knows he's been dominant in Double-A. You know, he's been striking out a lot of guys in Triple-A his last two starts. And, you could if he does pitch well and those two continue to fall, so you could see Peterson, McClain, Tong, as your postseason, you know, first round. I mean, I know I'm jumping the gun here, but
yeah, I mean, just a little bit. I mean, Bobby, we have not seen Tong go out there and make his major league debut.
Well, if he does,
and yeah, I mean, right. I get he's looked. Yeah, no, yeah, it can lengthen things out. There's no question. I mean, it can, and you know, you can find different ways. Listen, the Dodgers won a World Series last year, and they had games where they used openers and leaned into that bullpen. So, you know, there's different ways. There's you know, you could sense it. You get a feel what McClain has provided this Met fan base, which is a general sense of excitement, you know, and just, you know, hope, you know, because you were watching this starting rotation and you could look at it, the people criticizing Stearns not good enough, Montas signing disaster. Yeah, Holmes is good. He's not great. You know, concerned about the amount of innings he throws, doesn't throw enough strikes. The amount of work the bullpen's going to log, and McClain has changed that conversation. Now, listen, if you go out and if Tong is nearly, it's hard to think that in three starts, Jonah Tong's going to have a 0.89 ERA like Nolan McClain's been able to do for the New York Mets. But if he is nearly as dominant, then yeah, he's going to throw himself into the discourse and throw himself into the conversation in terms of being that guy come the Major League Baseball postseason and the playoffs. Rob in Smithtown's up next to the fan. What's going on, Robbie?
Hey, Moose, always awesome to hear you on the air.
Thanks, Rob. What's on your mind, bud?
Hey, not much. You were talking about Fields and the Jets before, and, you know, you were saying, like, how you can have all the talent in the world, but, you know, sometimes you just got to be a modern quarterback to succeed, and kind of just expand on that. What's going to happen if and when they fall behind? Like, he's going to have to throw, and you know teams are going to start the game plan where they're going to just try to get out to these fast starts on the Jets, and it'll be interesting to see when that happens and, you know, how much of a threshold or how much, you know, the coaches will be okay with kind of just sticking to the plan, sticking to the run game. At what point do you just abandon it and you're just going to have to throw? But, I mean, if he does, look out, because then this team's going to be awesome if he could do that.
Yeah, Rob, what would lead you to believe that he can? Like, if you look at Justin Fields, I mean, his career completion percentage is 61%. His high-water touchdown throws in the season is 17 that he did in 15 games. Now, you know, he's also gone out there in 2022, and he ran for 1,100 yards and 9 touchdowns for the Chicago Bears. Now, is that necessarily sustainable when you're looking at the quarterback position? Okay, and, you know, and that was, you know, there were a lot of people in the National Football League that said, well, he combined that year for, you know, what was it, 25 touchdowns, I believe, on the season, you know, and had nearly 3,500 yards of total offense, and saying, well, Justin Fields has arrived. Well, I need a quarterback that's going to complete more than 60% of his passes.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think they're just hoping and praying, really, that him and Garrett Wilson.
Well, you listen to Mugi today, and Mugi's telling you that, well, you know, just like Baker Mayfield led the Browns to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like, true. I think they're hoping it's going to be Ohio State all over again, and they're just hoping.
No, I get it, but like not like the comps are not it, like it's nauseating to a point. Like you can't compare him to Mayfield. Mayfield got in his own way at times with the Cleveland Browns. The concern with Baker Mayfield too was, you know, the size, you know, at times a little bit too much of the moxie. There was unquestionably is about a leader, but you know, was it going to be able to translate? But you know, Baker Mayfield had success with Cleveland. Didn't end well. And then had him, found him, you know, and then landed down in Tampa, where it's a very pro quarterback, pro throwing quarterback system. Now they've gone through a number of different offensive coordinators. I mean, you step in and take an OC job down in Tampa, and you have success with Mayfield, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, you know, and that passing game. You're going to be in line to go out there and get a head coaching opportunity. I mean, two head coaches have gone out there and have become head coaches in the National Football League after being OCs down in Tampa. So we've seen it, right? So you put, you know, you're minimizing what Mayfield was in with the Cleveland Browns. So I, you know, we'll see. And Muji's being positive, spinning positive. We've seen signs, we've seen growth, we've seen strength, better rhythm, all these things, all positives, all football cliches, all quarterback cliches. We'll find out exactly how it looks against the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I think it's got to look decidedly different than what we have seen. And it can't be necessarily you have to see it week one, but as this season does go along, because you've got to be able to throw the ball better than what Fields has shown him himself the ability to do so in the National Football League over the course of his first 4 years. You know, 3 in Chicago, 1 in Pittsburgh. You can't be that throwing the football at the quarterback position and have sustained success. That's the issue you have. Let's head out to Malvern. It's Sonny. It's the fan. What's going on, Sonny?
Moose, great to hear you during the week. And between me, you, and all your millions of loyal listeners, they screwed you. You should be on during the week, Moose. You know I love you. You're my favorite host by far.
Well, I appreciate that, Sonny. What's on your mind, bud?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Mets, but a giant point really quick, if I may. It's become a really interesting story, Moose. I mean, every sports channel I turn on, they're talking about the Giants and Jackson Dart. And everyone has a different perspective. It's very interesting. She thought game one. She thought the middle of the season. Should he sit out the rest of the first season? And a lot of people think he's ready. But the main question is that nobody's asking Moose, is that which is the most important, is that offensive line ready? Is Andrew Thomas going to be completely healthy? Is the center going to, you know, get a little bit better? Is that offensive line going to gel? You ask any of the offensive linemen during the Super Bowl era, you know, Beal and O'Hara, they say it takes a half a season at least for the offensive line to gel. So I think that's the real question. And if the offensive line is ready, then I think you start Jackson Dart as soon as you want, if you think he's ready. But you never know if someone's ready until they're ready, if that makes sense.
Well, no, it does. And I think Shane kind of said, reiterate, used a different verbiage, Sonny, and said, you know, the plan will be what the plan is. You know, the Giants are not putting any kind of game or saying he has to play or whatever they're thinking internally. That has not been out there for public consumption. So, and I give them credit for that. So they're going to keep everything in-house, and I like the fact that they have not backed down on
that. Of
Russell Wilson being the starter week number one. But here's what it comes down to when you look at, you're right, the offensive line, Thomas being a big-time key, he's irreplaceable at the left tackle position. And you're not wrong about this offensive line finally coming together. They're not going to be the best unit in the National Football League. What they can't be is be downright terrible. And we've talked about this offensive line for the Giants for way too long.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So hopefully they get it together this year. It's about time. Anyway, as far as the Mets, listen, I got to be honest. I was really down on the Mets. I had no hope for them, you know, going deep into the playoffs. Obviously, everybody knew and expected them, and hopefully they still do. There's no reason not to hold off the Reds for the playoff spot. But now with, you know, McClain, you know, coming up and pitching great, and, you know, Soto, you know, clutch hitting finally in the last, you know, last month here, and timely hitting. The only thing I'm worried about is the rest of the starting pitching going more than 4 innings. They have to go at least 5 or 6 moves for the Mets to have a chance. And if everybody else moves, right? You're talking about everybody else. You're talking about Nimmo. You're talking about Lindor. You're talking about Alonso. If everyone just does their job, and of course Soto will keep doing what he's doing, the Mets can go far in the playoffs. There's no reason for them not to. So, you know, just
it's yeah, you should be excited.
My only concern.
I think it's fair. I mean, it should be. And McClain has been there aren't a lot of guys. Well, there have been historically. Like you look at Kershaw, Skeens. I shouldn't say that. Let me walk that back for a second. It is fun as a baseball fan to watch when a starting pitcher has got it going and how he is able to use his full repertoire to dominate a lineup. It's fun. It's like an art form.
We haven't had that in a while. And most weeks. And the Mets haven't had it through number one.
No, and you've seen that with McLain. And you really have. And this is not, you know, this is not Generation K. This is not the buildup that we had, you know, with Wheeler and Harvey and everything like that. You know, this has been a slow build. And, you know, desperate time. They, you know, I don't think the game plan was at the start of the year that McLain and Tong would be inserted into the starting rotation in August. But here we are because the Mets needed to, because they want to win. You know, you want to win, and you don't go out there and you know, kind of waste an opportunity and say, well, we'll go get them next year, because next year other issues present themselves. Not every year is one and the same. So the Mets had internal options to address that starting rotation. They tried at the MLB trade deadline. They couldn't get anybody at their price. And now they have found at least one guy that is an answer from within, and we'll see what Tong is like tomorrow night.
Yeah, can we please give kudos and Cohen come out publicly and give kudos to the Mets fans who have been packing Citi Field every night, even since late April when the Mets have been well under 500. They have been shelling out that stadium. They have been electric every night. Let's give some credit to the Mets fans.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, the Mets fans have showed out throughout the course of the year. And, you know, and Cohen called him out before the start of the season. You know that he was bothered by the fact that, you know, last year, I think they were like middle of the pack, 15th to 18th in terms of attendance in Major League Baseball. And that has changed this year. And I think, you know, to that end, you look at the impact of the signing of Juan Soto and the statement that makes, and then Cohen asking the fans to come out, not having to get pleaded to at the end of the season like Brandon Nimmo did a year ago. You know, we've got a big series come out. We need our fans here, all that stuff, almost shaming the Met fan to show up. They've been great all season long. The Met fan deserves a massive round of applause, no question. Mario Long Beach up next to the fan. What's going on, Mario?
What's going on? Nice to hear you today, Moose. Nice to hear you, Miss Day.
Thank you, brother. Hello? What's on your mind, bud?
Yeah.
Yes, so, I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay. So a little thing about here with the Yankees. I'm feeling good about the Yankees because it looks to me like Stanton, probably, like you said, the best hitter. The guy is hitting the ball so hard. I've never seen anything like this. This is like, I think the third baseman is scared. I mean, the pitcher thinks he might die if this guy hits one up the middle. I mean, this is and he's hitting even when you just see the way he's at bats. Right? He's not getting fooled. He's on almost every pitch. And now, Judge, what did Judge have last night, if I remember correctly? A homer and a single, right? So if he starts to play the way Judge can, and you get those two going at the same time, let's not forget Schlittler is probably as good as the Met guy right now, right? What were we talking about? McLain, right? I mean, they're similar in terms of what they've done so far, right? Schlittler will hit a 101 or whatever he hit. So I think we got a good thing coming at the end. And you know, at the end, I think, you know, Volpe's in a bad slump. I think he'll be better. And I also would like to bring to your attention that the batting average of what's the guy who replaced him, Cabrera, would it see? What's his name? Cabrera?
Caballero.
Yeah, Caballero. Caballero. His lifetime average is 227. Caballero. The other guy's 220. And then and Volpe's is 222. Also, Volpe, by the way, he has a 290 batting average in the playoffs. So but I understand he's hitting really bad, but it looks like he turned the page on the fielding. You know, he's throwing a lot better now, and I still think a lot of those picks could have been picked off. I'll listen to your answer. Nice talking. Have a good day.
You got it, Mario. I mean, yeah, we can look at Caballero. Yeah, and I mean, that's what Cashman emphasized when looking at Volpe in October. Listen, I don't think the Yankees are in any way getting off the Volpe train anytime soon. So if that's your concern, don't worry about it. It's, you know, we can talk about the 205 batting average, the 269 on base percentage, and say, you know what, it's no big deal. Defense is a little bit better. I mind you, you know, he was not brought up where the fact of, he was going to be Omar Vizquel, Ozzie Smith defensively at shortstop. That was not going to be the bread and butter of Anthony Volpe. It was going to be what he provides offensively day in and day out. Like, that's where the strength was. And it hasn't been. Not consistently. You know, it hasn't been. And he's run remarkably hot and cold. But, yeah, I mean, Schlittler's been really good. I mean, he has. He hasn't been as jaw-dropping, impressive as McLain was first three starts, though. I mean, McLain's got a 0.89 ERA, but there's nothing not to like from a Yankee young hurler who got thrown into the deep end of the pool and what he has provided this team. I'd agree with you. He's been impressive. Ari in West Orange is up next in the Fan. What's going on, Ari?
Hey, how you doing, Mark? Thanks thanks so much for taking the call. Always a pleasure talking to you and hearing you on the Fan. You know, just to hit on a couple of the Yankee points, and I'll kind of fire back on the previous caller and sort of go in the other direction. And you said this as well. And this is what happens with the Yankees. And you know, my friend and I have to talk about this all the time, that whenever they go on this run against these really bad teams, a lot of Yankee fans get caught up and say, all right, we're now all of a sudden World Series champions. Now, forgetting of, you know, they put us through 2 months, June, July, and being in August, of absolute miserable baseball. And, you know, I know a previous caller had said that they beat the Mariners. That was in early July. Again, they're obviously a playoff team. That was early July. That was a long time ago. That caller forgot about the fact that we got swept by the Marlins, of all teams, in early August. And, you know, and just this past weekend, they four games against the Red Sox at home. They barely showed up. You know, they embarrassed themselves in the base pass. They had defensive mistakes. They didn't get clutch hitting. And that really has defined the Yankee era for a lot of years. So, you know, yes, I expect them. And I knew this was going to happen. I had a feeling they were going to win the last game on Sunday night, which they did. And I knew they would go on this run against the Nationals. And now they got the White Sox, same thing. But people have to realize, after that, they have, it's got the order, but it's...
It's Houston, it's Toronto, yeah. Detroit, Boston.
Right. That's right there. Those are nine games against teams that will be in the playoffs. And, you know, go out there in those, 12 games. You go out there in those 12 games and win eight of them. And then, you know, then we can start to talk. And it does the thing real quick. And you have to remember about the playoffs in the Aaron Boone, Aaron Judge era. The Yankees have never beaten a team outside the AL Central in any playoff round. And the only AL Central team that's making it this year are going to be the Tigers. So, you know, there's no Royals, there's no Guardians, no Twins for them to beat up on in the early rounds like they have been in these couple of years. So until that happens, until they start to show in the big games, and that next week when they have the opportunity, especially against Toronto, who Toronto embarrassed them. They were in first place in July. Toronto embarrassed them, swept them, got them out of first place. So that right there is the key series. Go out there and take two out of three. Don't lose that series or don't get swept, you know, because at the end, that's going to be the same story, And I'm sure, you know, I'm a Yankee fan a long
time. I agree with you. I think those 12, and I think Fried's lined up to start the opener in Houston on Tuesday night. But you're not wrong. I mean, those 12, we've talked about the Yankees and not beating quality teams. Well, you're going to have an opportunity because sandwiching, you got four with the White Sox, and you got Houston, Toronto, Detroit, and Boston. And then, you know, the landing spot at the end of the season is Minnesota, Baltimore, Chicago, Baltimore. You know, the question about whether or not the Yankees are going to be a playoff team, I mean, those conversations are long gone. Now it's a matter of just how dangerous a playoff team are they going to be come October. And you like to see this team start to build a little confidence against quality teams in the regular season, and they're going to have the opportunity to do so over the course of those 12 games.
Call of the day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Head out to Brooklyn. It's Omar. It's The Fan. What's going on, Omar?
I want to tell you, I make a bold prediction. Everybody can say that.
Well, let me hear.
New York Jets are going to make the playoffs this year. And Buffalo Bills are going to win the Super Bowl after all the curses that they have went through.
Right.
I'm going very calm. Buffalo Bills are the Super Bowl champion 2026, and the Knicks are the 2026 champion of NBA. My year has finally arrived in 2026. I have been waiting so many years. Let's go rolling, baby! 2026 is New York Knicks and Buffalo Bills year, man! Let's go and start this campaign in September!
There you go, Omar, all fired up about the Knicks and winning a championship this year in the NBA, and very, very confident about his Buffalo Bills. There you have it. That was your call of the day. Interesting couple notes. Dawn Staley, the South Carolina women's basketball coach, talked about, you know, being contacted, interviewed by the New York Knicks, said even though she grew up in Philadelphia, she would have taken the job. It is the New York Knicks, and would have left women's college basketball. And I think it's, you know, it would have been, listen, a fascinating hire, a groundbreaking hire in the NBA. There's no question about it. And Dawn Staley is an exceptional basketball coach. With the expectations coming, with the expectations that are on the Knicks this year, I think it's probably the highest expectations the Knicks have had since since really Michael left to go play baseball. I mean, it really is. You know, with now Tibbs out, no more minutes police, Mike Brown in as the head coach, the offensive and defensive assistants they've added. You know, you look at Mikal Bridges signed to a contract extension. Don't have to hear about any kind of complaining that he's not signed to a long-term deal. You know, the Knicks going to be a little bit more offensive, up-tempo and style. No Halliburton, he's done for the year, ruptured Achilles. No Jason Tatum, he's obviously out with the ruptured Achilles. So, I mean, the floor is wide open here for the Knicks. So it would have been tough. I think Staley could do it. I think she could coach in the NBA. It would have been tough to step into this job with these expectations, given as groundbreaking a hire. But I'm sure, I mean, even though the Knicks have not won a title since 1973, and NBA, the Mecca, Madison Square Garden, I'm sure that would have piqued her interest, and she confirmed that. The other interesting thing, and this is one I didn't have on the bingo card today, which is that Mark Teixeira is running for Congress in Texas. Okay. All right. Never anticipated that one coming through, but there he is. I always thought Teixeira was a disappointment as a Yankee. I got to be honest with you. Alan in New Hyde Park's up next to the fan. What's going on, Alan?
What a pleasant surprise on a Thursday to hear you won. How you doing, all right?
Good, Alan. How you doing, buddy?
All right. Listen, good. Listen, I know we missed each other on Sunday, so I'm not going to go into that. It's on the Odyssey app. If you remember 2 weeks ago when we spoke, I mentioned the Yankees needed to take 3 out of 4 from Boston, and we all know the reverse happened. So no reason to go over that situation. The Yankee pitcher, Schlichter, and the Met pitcher, I mean, they're both actually helping both teams at the same moment in time, and hoping for my Yankees and your Yankees. Maybe we have another Mel Stottlemyre. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but this guy looks like he knows what he's doing. Listen, the Yankees, with all these fans calling about this, that, you had a call a few minutes ago. I'm with him. Let me see how they do after we get rid of Chicago. Hopefully they'll win some games over there. When we go into Houston and Toronto, Toronto comes in, and then Detroit and Boston. Let's see how we end up in mid-September with this group. Oh, they're high and mighty. By the way, a question, and then a couple of more things if I get the time. When the Yankees win a game, have you noticed that Aaron Boone always salutes upstairs to somebody with his waving of his fist, typing his hands? I wonder who he's saluting to. I don't know if you know that answer. I don't know.
Oh, maybe family. I have no idea. I haven't really taken notice.
I mean, for me, Boone, act like you've been there. A comment that Rudy gave, which I think is extraordinary. What's the matter?
Aren't we analyzing a little bit too much? I mean, I don't know who he's waving to. So what? In a game in which emotions come into play, maybe he's sending his love to somebody. I have no idea.
I've never seen a manager always do that. That's all. I'm not getting on Boone's case. It's just something I noticed that he does.
All right, Alan?
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, again, I would say this. Stanton, amazing. Grissom, unbelievably amazing. Bellinger, the right man at the right time in the right spot, anywhere you shake it. So I just think, you know, Judge, you know, coming around, this and that. Hopefully his arm will get better because as time goes on, but we don't know that answer. So I'm just saying, this Yankee team right now has an opportunity. They're 4.5 games out, 4 on the loss column, 1 game or half game behind the Red Sox. They have the opportunity. Not to use the line of our manager.
They're going to fatten up. I mean, really, the schedule after this weekend against Chicago gets a lot more difficult, and we talked about that in a previous segment. Chris Bayshore, the fan. What's going on, Chris?
Yeah, hey, Moose, how are you? It's a good show. I enjoy hearing you during the day. I got a couple of things on McClain I think are interesting. I think that if you're a Mets fan and you watch that guy throw, you can't help but be excited. But it's nice to see a guy do kind of like 3 things. I mean, his delivery is so simple, and he pounds strike zone, and he works quickly. I mean, you're playing the field behind him. Yeah, I mean, you're playing the field behind him. The guy gets the ball, gets the pitch, and he throws it. And he's pounding the strike zone. You don't have to worry about two or three guys getting on. I mean, it's great to see.
Well, Chris, you know what else is refreshing? Starting pitching matters. Like, it matters. It really does. Like, they can have an impact. And, you know, you can look at it and they can set a tone and change the course and do all that stuff. So, like, it does. Even though we're in today's day and age of micromanaging the starters and they become less and less impactful and they go less and less deeper into games and can't wait to get to the bullpen and can't wait to go out there and match up and have guys for the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th innings and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, McLean has gone out there and has been really, really good. And last night was really a virtuoso performance. 95 pitches, 8 innings, 4 hits, no walks. Was 71 strikes of his 95 pitches. Commanding 6 different pitches. It was great to watch. It was fun.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, you talk about starting pitching being refreshing, too. It's also refreshing when you see a guy hit 280, 290, or 300. It's kind of like those are two staples of the game that are just going away. And people will tell you that it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. I mean, you put the ball in play, things will happen. And, you know, you get a guy that goes, you know, 6, 7, 8 innings. Obviously, you save your arms for the rest of the week. So it does matter. I mean, to say it doesn't matter is ridiculous.
Yeah, Chris, I think average does matter. But I think there will be people in the analytics departments across Major League Baseball that like to de-emphasize it. Final call, Eddie, Vernon, New Jersey. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's going on, Mark? How you doing? Listen,
good, Eddie.
First time I ever talked to you personally, because I didn't listen overnight, and I want to give you kudos for your acumen, your passion, and just your overall knowledge and delivery of the sport talk.
Eddie, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I wanted to talk about Aaron Glenn and the Jet and the changing of the culture and all this and that. Why was Justin Fields released from Pittsburgh? Now, here's Tomlin. This guy's got 20 years there, and he's done nothing but win.